part of our Living Wholeheartedly podcasts, we're going to be having a series of conversations to hear a range of experiences and stories and understandings on human sexuality. I'm joined today by my friend and colleague, Doug Swanee, who is the Connectional Secretary of the Methodist Church in Britain. Doug, thanks so much for the conversation today. Would you tell us a little bit about yourself and your faith journey?
Very happy to do so. I'm one of these people that doesn't have a great story about, you know, my road to Damascus experience. Mm-hmm. I grew up in a church family and grew up in knowing what it was, I think, to live in a faith household. And most of my early memories are very much focused around the church and mm-hmm. Sunday school and the boys' brigade. And that sense of being part of a church family, it was a Presbyterian church in the west of Scotland. And I find it difficult, I guess, to separate my faith journey from my church journey, which mm-hmm. is maybe not a bad thing. Mm-hmm. But that sense, I guess, really from a very early age, that there was something vocational in my church journey. Mm-hmm. And so I think I probably explored, probably from about the age of nine, what it would be to be a minister. And just in my head, that sense of being part of a church community. And, you know, today we've been praying for the saints that came before us. And whenever I think of those that had the biggest influence in my faith journey, they range from my great-gran, who, you know, was a real person of faith. Interestingly enough, she went to the Methodist church on a Sunday night
right.
to go to Bible class.
Oh, okay.
They went to proper church on a Sunday morning. But I remember my Sunday school teachers, Mrs. Bell and Miss Rogers, and I remember those people as being, you know, the ones that guided me and thinking about God and life and what that meant. So my story is, it's not that exciting. There's no bright light moment where, you know, mm-hmm. I sense something different. I have that experience, I think, of knowing God and knowing Christ all my life.
It's lovely. And so what does living wholeheartedly as a follower of Jesus look like for you day to day?
We've been doing some work in the Methodist Church in Britain to really try and unpack some of that. And we've done that in our conversations around what it is to be inclusive, evangelistic, justice-seeking as a Methodist people. But in the very heart of that, a number of my colleagues have worked on a Methodist way of life. And we've really tried to explore what it is in our everyday lives to do something that looks Methodist. And some of that isn't only owned by Methodism. You know, absolutely, it's a Christian expression of life. But I think within there, that sense of living wholeheartedly is to realise the accountability that we have to ourselves, to God, to one another, mm-hmm. to be able to discuss and to share those things that we're committing to, how we're trying to be different. And so I think for me, the wholehearted piece comes into all aspects of our life. What is it to look around the world and to recognise where we need to work harder for justice? Where is it we need to try harder to be inclusive? Mm-hmm. But how can we be a confident people who are able to talk about our faith, to not be ashamed of the things that we believe, that we either need to challenge, the things we want to give thanks for? So that Methodist way, I find that so helpful mm-hmm. to put a framework around what we should be doing, that daily prayer, the daily reflection on what God is saying to us mm-hmm. in our lives, I think is just so critical.
So what helps you with that? So that framework is there, the Methodist way of life, but what helps you with that day to day?
I think what helps me is those that surround me.
Okay.
You know, it's the colleagues who are, you know, fellow pilgrims who, you know, are also trying to lead a Methodist way of life. It's asking those kind of questions, I think, in your daily life. You know, as you read the newspaper, you don't just read it and respond from a personal or a political viewpoint, but you're asking yourself, well, what is my faith saying to me in this? As a result of what I see happening in the world, what am I going to be pushed into thinking about doing? So I think for me, it is very much a community activity. And I think for me, that, you know, it's one of the hallmarks of Methodism, that sense of us being accountable to one another,
yes,
you know, and being willing to admit where we've not got it right and we've fallen short of the mark, and look for that support. So that framework isn't something on a bit of paper. It's how you see other people living it out. Mm-hmm. You know, I have friends and colleagues who I look to as being those saints I'm walking amongst, because their faith and their commitment just inspires me. But, you know, beyond anything I think I could offer or achieve. So people, I think, are a big part of it. The community of believers that we both choose to be amongst, whether that's our church community or those that we're lucky enough to live out our vocation with.
Mm-hmm. And that's such a strong part of Methodism, isn't it? That corporate accountability, that helping each other on.
Yeah, I think it is. And I think it's that willingness to talk about it as well. And for me, I think there's a real vulnerability in that, you know, that it's the willingness to share with people that you don't always respond in the way you know you should, you know, being able to have a sense that you're not going to get it right all the time. And the point of being on that journey and living within a framework is that we try as much as possible to be the best that we can be. But we're not going to do that on our own.
No.
You know, we're absolutely, you know, calling on the power of Christ to be better than we'd be ourselves. But being able to do that, I think, with other people,
it's
really important.
It really is. Really is. So as a person of deep faith in Jesus, part of your identity is that you're gay. Tell me about how that worked out growing up in a church context and now.
It's funny because when I think back, I guess I mentioned the being a minister and realising that I was gay, probably, you know, there was some of that really early realization, 9-10 years old, you know, where you're responding to the world, you know, maybe in a different way, or you're asking different questions. And although I grew up in a, you know, very, you know, church family, church experience, I have no memory of it being part of the conversation.
Okay.
So I don't think back to being 10, 11, 12, as I was coming to terms with my sexuality and who I was, that there was any sense of a conversation within my own church community that being gay was somehow different or wrong. I don't ever remember that. Now, that isn't to say those debates were probably not happening in the 1980s in the Church of Scotland. I don't really remember. But at a local level, I don't ever remember that being part of the conversation that I was there for. So I guess I had a very, maybe a, I don't know if it's a unique experience, but it was a long time before I questioned how I felt and who I was as being something that was incompatible with the Christian faith or that the church would frown upon. Because it just wasn't part of the narrative. So I have a sense of being very lucky in that, or either I was just so, you know, I didn't want to hear it, or was so blinkered to it. So I didn't have those debates, I guess, at those formative years of it being something I needed to question.
Yeah.
And I guess it was only when I decided to go to Trinity College in Glasgow and study for my first theology degree, that I really became aware, I guess, at those stages in my, you know, kind of late teenage years. I, you know, went to university quite early from school. And so suddenly was then exposed to a very different, broad range of views that I hadn't really been exposed to before, and suddenly came to realise the strength of feeling there could be within the Christian community. But by that time, I already knew, you know, I'd come to terms with who I was, you know, and so for me, it wasn't that those two things went together. You know, I came to the debate having a sense that this is who I was. And so therefore, I was able to engage in the debate, perhaps almost slightly objectively in some ways in those early years studying theology.
Yeah, well, that makes sense. So that you had worked that out by that stage, so could engage in those conversations?
Yes. Yeah, I think so. I wasn't coming into the conversation, I guess, with I know my own sense of angst about, you know, either trying to hide something and be somebody I wasn't by that point. And so being able to study it through university, I was able to elect, you know, to write my dissertation on, you know, sexuality and Christianity, looking into some of the history of it, reading, you know, the Pauline texts and having to have that sense of, I know the argument, I can read the argument about why some people would feel so convicted to believe differently from how I saw things. I guess again, my own story was such that I came to it feeling at peace about who I was. So it was, it's a very lucky journey, I guess, different from an awful lot of other people, and I recognise that.
Mm-hmm. And in September, you and Craig got married.
Indeed.
Tell us about that.
Well, obviously, it was the most amazing
absolutely.
Day. For me to be married in church, to get married, in the eyes of God, in front of the congregation, family and friends, and to have our wedding service conducted in the way it was by a close friend. And the focus of it was our marriage, was the communion that we took as part of the wedding service. It was just amazing, to have that sense that I was able to do that, and that's who we are. That's, our marriage was a marriage in the eyes of God and in the eyes of the church. And I know that within the Methodist Church in Britain, we are a broad church. And I know that for many, there are many churches that, wouldn't be willing to have same-sex marriage. And I absolutely respect their right to do so. But I think for me, I'd want to communicate to people that sense of the joy and the sense of completeness and wholeness that my marriage, our marriage, was undertaken in that place and that way, and I think what was, beautiful liturgy. I think that the Methodist Church in Britain liturgy, the reworking of the marriage service from last year, it was just such a beautiful service. But to have that sense of being able to pick hymns and talk about the communion and how that was going to be, mm-hmm. The gift of that was just immense. It was quite something.
Wonderful. Tell me about, you were talking about broad church there and the Methodist Church in Britain recognising that there are broad range of views. How, and your own engagement around that in college and university, for you as a person of deep faith, how do you engage or how do you address the questions where the Bible is viewed differently? So those who feel that the Bible prohibits same-sex relationships, how do you engage around that? And how does it feel, Doug, as well?
I come at it from somebody that has read, in the way that many people who are interested in a subject, you read all the material, you can read the Bible commentaries and the critiques. And I think there's well worn, it now feels like, that we have walked this path for many, many years and trying to understand how we use the actual scriptural words and how we set them in context and try and understand what was being said at the time. And we look for comparisons throughout scripture where, that there are things that we now do not any longer feel are, attitudes or views that we'd want to hold. I think for me, again, it comes back to that kind of Methodist sense of how do we hold scripture and balance that out with our, our reason and our wisdom and our experience? And what have we learned over the years about those that we have othered, about those that the church communities have, for whatever reasons, cultural, for financial gain, for any manner of reasons, have felt the need to push people out? I understand there is a very strong view in those who would say, this is their conviction. I think for me, the issue is always, who have you travelled with? Who have you met? Who have you spoken to? Mm-hmm. Because I think starting out with the words on the page, it's a very different conversation when you're talking to people whose lives have been impacted and affected. And I think, I also had the experience of going to seminary in the United States. So I did a master's degree at Union. And I remember going to Union, I moved to New York in 1996. And that was, I'd never been outside Europe, but it was a terrifying experience, 23 years old. And I went to Union, which is well known as being a liberal seminary. What I discovered though, the breadth of what was being conducted in terms of worship and reflection, it went to places that made me feel uncomfortable.
Okay.
I discovered that what it is to live in a broad community means at times there are things that we all feel questioned about.
Mm-hmm.
But you go in community, you experience them, you learn.
Mm-hmm.
And in that, you become, I think, more confident in your own relationship with God, about the gifts that God has given you. But that sense of being pushed to all our extremes, we all have to do that. And so I think I will continually, hopefully, encourage people in a positive way that we all have to hear views that are not our own. How you live with those is harder. Mm-hmm. But I do think it's really critical if we are to be inclusive. That means being inclusive of a whole range of different views, but being willing to talk that through. And I certainly know my experience at Union taught me, you know, coming from the background that I had, thinking I was, you know, a liberal theologian, and, you know, I discovered actually I was quite conservative on certain elements, you know, because there were things that were a surprise to me. Mm-hmm. And I think we all need to be open to that, mm-hmm. I hope.
So what, I mean, you know, here in the Methodist Church in Ireland, we're seeking to discern God's will in this. What would you be saying to us, Doug, to help us in that discernment?
I think it's about thinking about who the people we're talking about are. It's too easy to other and to assume, first of all, that we're talking about people who are not already part of our church community. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, for people with all views, it's how we think about the gospel as a gospel that was very much not just for those on the margins, but was of those on the margins. And how are we, how are any of us as a church, how is the Methodist Church in Ireland looking at the people that are most on its margins? And listening and understanding, you know, and that adage, you know, don't speak about people, speak with them, enable people to speak for themselves. Mm. You know, where is that conversation leading to? And where are the voices that are either not being heard because they're not speaking, because they maybe either feel afraid or feel silenced? How do we engage in that honest conversation? And that really gives people the opportunity to tell their story, mm-hmm. and their experience, and not feel that the response is to try and rectify that. You know, that is, we have to hear people's experience for what it is. You know, the debate that you're having is the debate that is happening in many different church contexts, and you know, we've seen the impact that's having on global Methodist communities as they try and work it out. But I think what I see happening in so many places is that willingness to keep listening is what broadens our experience and helps us to reason differently. So how do you have to have the conversation? There has to be a willingness to do that, and that sometimes means that I think perhaps even those that feel most strongly at both, and there's not just two sides of the story, we're always aware of that. You can't just talk about the two sides of the debate because there are many more than two sides of the debate. Yeah. But actually who speaks first and who gives way, and that generosity of us being a conferring people. How do we allow and enable our own views to be influenced because God speaks through other people? That can only happen when you do deep listening. And that takes time.
Yeah.
It takes time, and it takes that vulnerability for some people to be willing to tell their stories, but for us all to be able to listen. And I've been so impressed with so many of the people, I think, that have been part of our conversation in this, in Methodist Church in Britain, because some people have sacrificially listened. They've been seen to sacrificially listen. And to me, that is very much modelling a Methodist way of life, that taking time to sit and to be with individuals and understand them is what makes the difference.
Okay. Thank you, Doug. Thank you. Thank you for sharing your experience and your faith. It's been a blessing to listen. Thank you. Thank you. And please do watch out for the other conversations in this series as we together discern God's will and God's way. Thank you.